Have you ever noticed how the tech industry just, gives you absolute whiplash?
Oh, constantly.
Yeah.
Like one minute they're painting this picture of a glorious, frictionless, utopian future where everything just works seamlessly. And then the very next minute you look down and they are abruptly pulling the plug on the present.
Right.
It's like hiring a contractor who promises to build you this state-of-the-art smart mansion. But while you're standing there looking at the digital blueprints, they're in the other room violently tearing out your perfectly good working plumbing.
It leaves the consumer, like the user, the player, constantly off balance. I mean, you are always waiting for the other shoe to drop, just wondering if the platform you rely on today will even exist tomorrow, or at least function the same way.
Exactly. So welcome to this deep dive. Today we are looking at the July 11 edition of the Tekken Knight newsletter. And we have three stories that seem completely, totally disconnected on the surface.
But they're really not.
Right? They're not. We've got a massive wave of layoffs at Xbox and Bethesda. We have old school Wall Street titans suddenly pouring money into crypto. And then we have social media giants desperately trying to purge AI from their platform.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is a lot, but there is this hidden, massive collision happening between all of them. Today is really a case study on the intense friction between corporate efficiency, rapid technological disruption, and honestly, the most fragile currency in the digital age, consumer trust.
When you lay all the sources out side by side, you just see these companies making vast sweeping decisions to optimize their spreadsheets. But in doing so, they completely ignore the human element that, built their empires in the first place.
Let's start with what can only be described as an absolute earthquake in the gaming world.
Yeah.
We're looking at a brutal wave of layoffs at Xbox and Bethesda in July 2026.
Yeah, it was heavy.
Around 350 employees were just let go from Bethesda and its affiliated studios. And the source is really clear that these aren't just redundant middle management roles, right? This
Yeah.
purge hit the floor hard. We are talking programmers, lead designers, concept artists, marketing teams, like people actually building the world.
And putting that 350 number into the broader context of the sources is just staggering
Huh.
because this isn't an isolated incident. It's part of a massive industry-wide contraction.
Right.
The data points to over 12,000 layoffs across the gaming industry in 2026 alone. That affects something like 25 different studios.
No.
Yeah, and it represents an 18% decrease in the total workforce compared to just 1 year prior. It is a catastrophic loss of human capital and, institutional knowledge.
And you can see that directly in the internal fallout. Like
Yeah.
a leaked email from Todd Howard, Bethesda's executive director, surfaced where he called this one of the hardest days of his entire professional career.
I'm sure it was.
And the ripple effects for players are going to be felt for a decade. Bloomberg's Jason Schreier noted that because of this specific loss of talent, Elder Scrolls 6, which, by the way, was supposed to be entering its intensive full production phase right now, is pushed back to at least 2030.
Man, 2030.
Yeah. Schreier actually went as far as warning that it risks becoming a legend that never gets released.
Which is a crushing blow for a fan base that has been waiting since Skyrim dropped in 2011, right? But we really have to look at the mechanics of why Microsoft is taking a sledgehammer to one of its most prestigious studios.
So what's the math there?
Well, the sources point to a perfect storm of economic and strategic catalysts. First, you have the fallout from Starfield. It launched in 2023 with incredible hype, and it did sell well by normal standards.
Right, but normal wasn't enough.
Exactly. Microsoft didn't pay $7.5 billion for Bethesda's parent company to get good sales. They needed a decade-defining cultural phenomenon to drive platform adoption. And Starfield simply didn't meet those astronomical internal financial expectations.
And then you add a genuine gaming recession to the mix. AAA game sales across the board in 2026 have just broadly declined. The pandemic era boom is long gone. Inflation has tightened consumer wallets, and game development cycles have bloated to, what, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, at least. So Microsoft is facing immense pressure from shareholders to cut the fat. So they are shifting their strategy away from these massive, expensive single-player
On
gambles.
subscriptions, right?
Exactly. They're leaning heavily into Game Pass and cloud services. And building games for a continuous cloud-based subscription service requires a very different development ecosystem than building a standalone boxed RPG.
Right, that pivot to cloud and subscription models totally changes the math on human resources.
Yeah.
Now, whenever there are layoffs of this magnitude, the narrative online just spirals out of control.
Always.
So social media immediately ran with this rumor that Microsoft was specifically laying off American workers to replace them en masse with cheaper H-1B visa holders.
Right, I saw that.
Yeah, and Microsoft came out swinging on this, issuing a very strong on-the-record denial. They stated unequivocally that these allegations were entirely false, insulting, and that the layoffs were strictly driven by business needs and performance metrics.
Which, you know, we have to take at face value.
We do. But if you look at the anonymous exit interviews from former employees, which are provided in the sources, the real concern wasn't about visas anyway. The underlying anxiety is about a massive shift toward outsourcing and temporary contract work.
Yeah, the problem these former employees are highlighting is the destruction of institutional memory. When you are building a massive RPG in a proprietary engine like Bethesda's Creation Engine, there are seasoned developers who have spent 15 years learning the quirks, the bugs, the physics of that specific software.
Right, it's tribal knowledge.
Exactly. And when you fire those tenured employees to save money and try to replace their output with highly inexperienced short-term contractors, you just don't get the same AAA quality.
It's like you're expecting someone who just walked in the door to build the foundation of a skyscraper.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
You might achieve short-term operational efficiency on a spreadsheet, but you are completely hollowing out the creative core of the studio. The final product suffers, the game launches broken, and you alienate the loyal fan base that built the brand in the first place. Microsoft is squeezing efficiency at the direct risk of destroying their relationship with the consumer.
And it all comes down to the danger of altering the fundamental agreement you have with your audience. When a company decides to prioritize a new, aggressively optimized revenue stream over the basic trust of the consumer, the backlash can be historically bad.
And there is a perfect cautionary tale about this in gaming history. The sources actually bring it up as a parallel. We need to take you back to the era of 2011 to 2013, a very dark chapter in Sony's history.
Oh no, the PlayStation Online Pass.
Yes. If you weren't gaming back then, here is how this aggressive DRM system worked. You would go to a store, buy a used physical copy of a PS3 game, say Uncharted 3 or Resistance 3. You take it home, pop the disc in, boot up the multiplayer, and immediately hit a paywall.
A literal $10 ransom.
Yes.
To access the online features of a physical game you had already purchased, you had to type in a 16-digit code. If it was a used game, the code was already redeemed by the original owner, so you just had to hand Sony $10.
Think about how insane that is from a consumer perspective. Imagine I invite you over to a house party. You show up, we are hanging out, listening to music, having a great time. Then you ask to use the bathroom, and I point down the hall, hold out my hand, and say, sure, that'll be $10.
I would leave immediately.
Right, because it completely breaks the social contract. When you buy a physical object, the assumption is that you own the whole object. You don't expect the manufacturer to tax you for using its basic features.
You'd have an empty house pretty quickly in that scenario.
Yeah.
But to understand the mechanics of why Sony instituted this, you have to look at the secondary market economics of the time. According to NPD Group data from 2011, roughly 30% of all physical game sales in America were used games.
That's a huge chunk.
It was. Retailers like GameStop were making an absolute fortune. They would buy a game back from a player for $30, flip it the next day for $55, and pocket the pure profit. The actual publishers and developers, the people who actually made the game, were seeing 0% of that massive secondary market revenue.
So Sony looked at that 30% chunk of the market and just saw a massive pile of money they weren't touching.
Exactly. They wanted a cut.
But what they failed to anticipate was the absolute fury of the consumer base. I mean, forums like NeoGAF and Reddit went into open revolt. Users correctly argued it was their fundamental legal right under the first sale doctrine to buy and sell used physical media without interference.
Right.
But the most fascinating part of the sources is the economic irony here. Sony failed to model how this DRM would actually depress their new game sales.
Because the secondary market was actually subsidizing the primary market, gamers are incredibly savvy about their hobby's economy. A huge part of the justification for dropping $60 on a brand new launch day game was the security of knowing you could power through it in a weekend and sell it back to GameStop on Monday for $30 or $40.
It effectively reduced the actual cost of playing new games.
Yes, and once Sony ruined the resale value by permanently tying the online access to a single-use code, consumers lost that safety net, so they just stopped buying the new games entirely.
Sony thought they could just penalize the secondary market into submission. They learned the hard way that you cannot just extract revenue. You have to offer actual tangible value.
And thankfully, they did learn.
They did. They officially canceled the online pass program in May 2013, right before the launch of the PS4. Instead of penalizing players, they pivoted to heavily investing in PlayStation Plus. They started giving out free games every month, basically offering a service that people actually wanted to subscribe to.
It was a vital realization about ownership and value. Sony tried to restrict what you could do with an asset you physically owned, but, you know, what happens when the concept of ownership goes entirely digital? That's the massive leap traditional Wall Street is making right now.
Let's shift gears then. From the digital goods of gaming to the ultimate digital asset, we are looking at a historic shift in traditional finance. Morgan Stanley, one of the most conservative, old guard Wall Street titans imaginable, has officially announced they are allocating 0.14% of their portfolio to Ethereum and Solana ETFs.
This is a massive watershed moment. We are seeing the first time a major Wall Street bank has officially publicly invested in altcoin ETFs. They are strategically positioning themselves for what analysts are widely predicting will be a massive 2027 crypto bull market.
Okay, I have to pause on that number, though, because when I first read this source, I genuinely laughed. 0.14%.
It sounds small.
Does 0.14% sound like a rounding error to you? Because to me, it sounds like James Gorman reached into the corporate couch cushions, found some loose change, and just threw it at crypto to make the analysts happy.
I know, it sounds microscopic, but that's until you calculate the sheer scale of Morgan Stanley's assets under management.
Okay, lay it on me.
They oversee over $1.5 trillion.
Wow.
Yeah, so that tiny fractional 0.14% allocation actually equates to approximately $2.1 billion being injected straight into the crypto ecosystem. That single, quote-unquote, couch cushion allocation is larger than the entire market capitalization of hundreds of mid-tier crypto projects combined.
Yeah, $2.1 billion is serious capital. The CEO, James Gorman, was incredibly blunt about the strategy, too. He stated, "We can no longer ignore digital assets." But the specific assets they chose are fascinating to me. Why Ethereum and Solana? If a traditional bank is finally wading into crypto, why not just stick to the safety of Bitcoin?
Because Morgan Stanley isn't just buying digital gold to store in a vault. They are investing in the mechanics of a new financial infrastructure. Bitcoin is primarily a store of value, right?
Right.
But Ethereum and Solana are the foundational rails for decentralized finance, and they're the infrastructure for tokenizing real-world assets. Wall Street banks don't care about meme coins. They care about smart contracts that can automate clearinghouses or settle cross-border transactions in seconds instead of days and tokenize bonds or real estate.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Ethereum holds the dominant market share for this architecture, and Solana is the aggressive, faster, significantly cheaper competitor trying to dethrone it. So by buying both, Morgan Stanley is essentially buying stakes in the fundamental plumbing of the future digital economy.
Traditional finance adopting these networks proves that digital assets are maturing way beyond the Wild West phase. Wall Street is finally bringing its massive trillion-dollar institutional capital to the frontier. But here's where it gets crazy. While Wall Street brings the capital, Silicon Valley is bringing something far more unpredictable to the trading floor. Total automation.
Robinhood's new AI agent. Yeah, this is where the intersection of retail finance and artificial intelligence becomes incredibly potent and, frankly, highly volatile.
Robinhood has rolled out this fully automated AI trader, initially launching it for their paid gold users. The pitch from CEO Vlad Tenev is almost dystopian in its ambition. He posted, "We're building the future of trading, a future where you only define your strategy and AI does the rest."
It is the ultimate promise of frictionless finance. The technology powering this isn't just a simple algorithmic bot either. It's a large language model.
Wait, like ChatGPT?
Similar architecture, yeah. But instead of generating text or chatting with you, it is acting as a financial execution engine. It ingests massive mountains of historical market data, live Bloomberg news feeds, and parses real-time sentiment across platforms like X and Reddit. It analyzes all of that unstructured text, determines that the market sentiment is bullish or bearish, and automatically executes conditional trades based on the parameters you set.
So you can give it a highly specific prompt, like if Ethereum jumps more than 10% in 24 hours while social sentiment remains negative, sell half my bag.
Exactly.
Or you can have it run a DCA strategy. Let's do a quick jargon buster for you listening on that one. DCA stands for dollar cost averaging. Instead of trying to brilliantly time the market and dropping $10,000 all at once, which usually ends poorly, you just set it to buy $100 of crypto every single week, regardless of whether the price is pumping or crashing. It smooths out your volatility risk over a long period.
Which is an incredibly sound, historically proven investment strategy. The friction arises when you hand the execution of that strategy over to an LLM that is also reacting to real-time, internet-wide sentiment. You introduce a completely novel vector of systemic risk.
And this is where the utopian vision totally falls apart for me. Think about the scale of Robinhood's user base. If millions of retail users are all suddenly relying on the exact same underlying AI model, a model that is trained on the exact same historical data, parsing the exact same news headlines, what happens when that AI spots a sudden, unexpected dip in the market? Don't we just get a synchronized robotic panic sell?
You are describing the exact nightmare scenario analysts are warning about, an algorithmic flash crash powered by language models.
Seriously?
Yeah. If the AI interprets a breaking news event as catastrophic, it triggers thousands of user-defined sell conditions simultaneously. That mass coordinated sell-off causes a steeper drop in the asset's price, which immediately triggers the next threshold of sell conditions. It creates this massive automated negative feedback loop that crashes the market in milliseconds before a human can even intervene.
We build this technology to create efficiency, to save us the headache of staring at candlestick charts all day. But when left unchecked, it has the potential to absolutely destroy the financial ecosystem it was built to optimize.
And that destruction of an ecosystem by unchecked automation isn't just a theoretical financial risk. We are watching it happen in real time in the realm of social media. The algorithms designed to maximize engagement have completely overrun the original purpose of the platforms.
Which brings us to the final major shift in our deep dive today. As of July 10th, 2026, Meta has instituted a massive, highly aggressive purge on Instagram. They're actively demoting and outright removing AI-generated images from the main feed.
It is a full-blown crisis of the tech industry's own making. The Instagram feed had become completely paralyzed by bot networks. These accounts were utilizing highly advanced generation tools like Midjourney and DALL-E 3 to flood the platform with clickbait, hyper-realistic illusions, and synthetic engagement farming content.
It was drowning out actual human connection.
Yeah.
The user complaints were just deafening. People were saying they couldn't even find real photos of their friends or family anymore. The feed was just this endless wall of perfectly lit synthetic garbage designed solely to game the algorithm.
Yeah.
Adam Mosseri, the head of Instagram, had to publicly step in, stating there's a desperate need for a return to content authenticity.
But the challenge of enforcing that authenticity is where the mechanics get incredibly tricky. We have reached a point in generative AI where human eyes often cannot distinguish a DALL-E 3 creation from a photograph taken on a smartphone. The lighting is perfect, the textures are flawless, so Meta is forced to rely on complex machine learning models and deep metadata analysis to detect the synthetic images.
The paradox here is almost tragic.
Yeah.
The tech industry as a whole just spent tens of billions of dollars over the last few years in this frantic, breakneck arms race to build AI models that can perfectly mimic reality. And now, those exact same companies are spending millions of dollars trying to build reverse algorithms and filters to protect us from the very AI they just forced upon us.
Oh, totally.
And why? Because at the end of the day, people just miss seeing genuine, slightly blurry, poorly lit photos of their friends' birthdays.
We engineered synthetic perfection only to realize that humanity inherently craves the imperfect reality of actual lived experience. A flawless AI image has zero emotional weight because there is no human intent behind it.
Let's connect all the dots here because we've covered a vast amount of ground in this deep dive.
Yeah.
Today, we've essentially looked at three massive industries grappling with the sheer velocity of technological change and how that speed constantly threatens to break the bond with the consumer.
Right. We saw clearly in gaming, where Microsoft sacrificed deep institutional knowledge and experienced talent in a desperate bid for spreadsheet efficiency and a pivot to cloud gaming.
And we saw it in finance, where Robinhood is risking the stability of the entire market just to offer the convenience of automated AI-driven trading right at the exact moment. Heavyweights like Morgan Stanley are finally bringing billions of traditional capital into the crypto space.
The through line in all of this, the ultimate corrective force, is the consumer. As we learned from Sony's disastrous online pass in 2011 and Meta's desperate AI purge on Instagram today, the deciding factor is always the human element. You can build the most efficient system in the world, but if it doesn't offer real, tangible value and undeniable authenticity, the ecosystem collapses.
The tech companies can build a house, but the consumer always decides if they actually want to live in it. Which leaves me with a final lingering thought for you to ponder on your own after we wrap up here. We are hurtling toward a future where AI might automatically manage our investment portfolios while we sleep, perfectly generate the art we scroll past on our morning commute, and maybe even write the code for the video games we play in the evening. If everything digital becomes effortlessly synthetic and infinitely reproducible, will our future digital lives just be machines endlessly entertaining other machines? Or will human-made, whether that is a clunky, hand-coded video game, a real unedited photograph, or a risky gut-instinct stock trade, become the ultimate, most coveted luxury status symbol of the future?
That is a fascinating reframe. When perfection becomes cheap and abundant, humanity becomes the premium.
Something to think about next time your tech whiplashes you. We want to warmly thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Tech Ignite newsletter. Keep staying curious. Keep looking for the hidden mechanics behind the headlines. And most importantly, keep questioning the information around you. We'll see you next time.